the contents of, let me see if I can access the campus for a second. First of all, I would like you to write in the forum and hear you guys over here, if you've already come to a decision about what accent you're going to lean towards in the British accent. You know that you have to settle for RP English and a second accent from the British Isles. Have you made up your mind? Southern Irish, very good option. You haven't decided. Southern Irish is very distinct, and I think it's quite easy to find recorded references that can help you prepare. And I have the feeling that both Scottish and Irish are the ones that probably accumulate the biggest amount of examples, both recorded and in paper. That will definitely help you towards preparing the accents for sure. Give me a moment, please. What about the people in the forum? Have you already decided which is the other accent that you want to choose besides RP English? Have you made up your mind? Southern Irish, okay, so that seems to be the winning factor here for the moment. Anyone else? Scottish or Southern Irish? Welsh, oh my gosh. Okay, Scottish probably. Who is the... Mercedes, do you have any friends or relatives, or have you been to Wales to lower the learning curve? Southern Irish. Yeah, there is a 50-50 preference. I have a friend from there. Then that's a good reason to yeah, don't worry, I understood it. That's a good reason to lean in one direction or in the other for sure. I'm going to download the updated Unit 2. And upload it to the virtual course so you can download it if you haven't already. We'll probably have some time to look into that practice file. Well, I still have to deal with some things here about the variability. Okay, I'll try to get this done before the class so you don't have to be waiting around for the files to be uploaded. I've got one more file to go, and we should be set. Remember that I'm going to be on that side. I'm going to be close to the board. If in any moment you can't hear me very well, just let me know in the chat and I'll get closer to the desk. Yeah, read that last message. Okay. And this is it's not a big file. Last file. See if we have time to deal with it today. Basically, what are we going to do today? We're going to we're going to cover theory from Unit 1, and we're going to step inside your comfort zone for probably the last time in the entire course. We're going to deal with RP English, okay? And I think that in some cases, some students were saying that they had never taken a phonetics course before, and therefore this is not your comfort zone either. But if you've already taken a phonetics course, especially if you've taken an UNED, 100% of chances that you're going to feel comfortable, because we're going to talk about RP English, which goes work with this.
We're going to deal with the rest of Unit 1.
Sorry? Did I? Ah, yeah. Sure. Clueless about what I did with it. You know, I always find my photocopies the moment I leave the class. So,
not very useful. Wanted to find them. I just had a special sheet of practice that I wanted to use, but I'll just have to use the following days. It's not very significant. Nothing great is lost even if I lose the document. In the case of Unit 1, we're past the pages of, kind of variability. Remember that the examination has two parts. More than two parts. It has three parts, if I'm not mistaken. Exactly, yes. The first part is multiple choice, a question where you have to talk about, you have to give an answer in text. Finally, a transcription of a text in the four varieties. We're going to work on examples of examinations. I'm going to pass this sheet around. This is the examination, Model B, I think, from 2018. As you can see, the typical questions that you get are questions from here, questions that you might overread, and especially, I don't know if it's in that example or in Model A of that same year. One of the questions is, for example, about slang if slang is referred to formality, if it's referred to the region from where it is, social conditions, and there I spot at least two or three questions that are available on the test that come from this section, kinds of variability.
We have money.
You have to give it a text. It's easier than it seems. The four transcriptions sound pretty hefty, but you have to take into consideration that Celia is very, very kind teacher. Correct. At the beginning of the exam, you have to cross out the varieties that you've chosen: Welsh, Scottish, or Irish. And afterwards, the accent from the southern hemisphere: Australian, South African, or West Indies. You remember my tip from the other day? If you're very good at RP English, don't think about the fourth accent. Choose South African English because it's going to be the most similar one in terms of transcription and transcription similarity. If you want to refresh in RP English, you can probably download an application or use one of these phonemic charts that you have available. If you write phonemic chart on Google, or you access the British Council and you write phonemic chart RP English, this is just you have another one, great. It would be really interesting if for every accent, you try to compose your own phonemic chart of which vowels and which consonants are available. Especially what you're going to find a lot of variation is in the diphthongation and the triphthongation. For example, triphthongation and rhotic accents disappear. And the diphthongs are severely reduced in other varieties of English. If you're able to come up with a chart like that, then you're gonna do great.
Referring to kinds of group variability, I'm really sorry that the screen is so small because it's you can't see it very well, but if you look at the photocopies, you can follow me as I explain it. The types of variability in accents are normally of two types. We've heard about this, and this is common sense. One is region. The more we move away from an accent, the more it's going to differ. Just think about how the accents from Madrid vary if you move towards the south, if you move towards the east, or if you move towards the north of Spain, or if you move towards the south, the northwest. The same is going to happen in English. The more you move, the regional variability is going to make the accent change significantly. The other element is social class. And social class is much more uniform. People from different areas are going to speak similar kinds of English because there is a certain unwritten perception of what is correct, what is socially correct, to pronounce in one way or the other. So even though the accents are not ranked, more elegant, less elegant, there is a certain tendency to diminish the presence or the absence of certain traits, of certain accents, and to impose them. Take into consideration the RP, the accent, the one that we're going to focus on, we're only going to focus on that one from the accents of England, has an elevated social status. So in any case, it's going to be very similar to the norm of the upper, the middle, upper, and the upper class. Okay, so RP English is going to resemble a sign of social distinctness, different to other dialects or other variation. Referring to the word dialect, the paragraph talks about what a dialect that has. Everybody speaks a dialect. Dialects have grammatical forms and regional vocabulary that is employed. There is a distinct differentiation based again on region and on social class. And I'm emphasizing it a lot because it would be a pity that if they ask you which of these conditions are not considered when talking about variation, and they write regional, social, political. If you haven't studied, maybe that doesn't sound very obvious, but if you stop to think about it for a moment, region and social are the ones that are going to determine the variation of a language, and it's going to be very easy to explain that if you have to talk about that. Sometimes there is an effect of trying to overdo an accent, and that idea of overdoing an accent is what is called, what it says in the last sentence of the second paragraph. Funny enough, some people trying to climb the social scale modify their accent in the direction of RP and assign wrongly certain pronunciations. They perform hypercorrections over their accent and they come up with a funny mix, okay? Which can be a failed attempt to achieve a higher social status with the way they talk. In addition to regional and social accents and dialects, I don't know if I pressed record. I'm going to, as a matter of fact, I think I did. Ah, yes, I did. Okay. In addition to regional and social accents and dialects, English has different styles. So this is another key word. We've understood the word regional and social variability. Dialects, it would be interesting as a way of preparing for the test to start to compose a glossary of what is variability? What is regional variability? What is social variability? What is dialect? What is an accent? What is hypercorrection? What are styles? English has different styles which are used in different social situations. And we know this. We speak in a different way when we're at work, and we're in a dinner party where we want to sound very elegant and very educated, and we're in a different
atmosphere. In formal situations, speakers tend to express themselves less carefully, eliding or assimilating. So there are going to be certain effects. There are going to be certain speaking effects, such as assimilation and elision. Assimilation is when we join words in one word, when we coalesce words, and elision is when we join sounds, which are going to be going to go in the opposite direction of social norm. So the more relaxed, the more informal we are, the more available these become. So the more these are present, the more informal our speech becomes. Okay, so we have to take into consideration that certain things that are are recognized mechanisms of pronunciation have an impact on the social etiquette that I want to achieve. Most differences have to do with the choice of words. If we use words that are very informal, when we talk about pronunciation choices, we talk about things like elision, assimilating, maybe dropping the yod. Instead of saying pure, say pure in RP, say pure. Pure. So that yod dropping, socially very acceptable in informal situations. If it's a choice of words, we're going to call a choice of words that are informal a slang. A slang is a collection of informal words that we use in informal situations. Something similar to a slang, but that has to do with specialization. When we talk about a subject or a topic, the kind of language that reflects our knowledge about that topic is what we call the register. Okay? The registers most often have to do with the vocabulary. And they also work as a set. So there is a close there is a close relationship between slang. Slang is normally referred to an informal collection of words that I use in an informal situation. A collection of words that maybe, for example, Javier would use because it's technical at his workplace, but he wouldn't dare use at home because he would see puzzled faces on the faces of his family members, because there are words that he normally doesn't use at home, would be a specific register. When you use a collection of words to achieve a certain register, you call that a jargon. So jargon has to do with a professional environment and a formal situation, and slang has to do with an informal choice of words. And there is no connection that we understood between a specific accent or a specific dialect and the choice of slang, register, or jargon. They're separated items, okay? It doesn't have to do. There are differences of pronunciation which cannot be explained, just the preference of one pronunciation over another. This kind of variation has to do with the idiolect that each of us speak. This is called free variation. So free variation are the changes that I apply to my pronunciation that don't have a clear explanation in terms of processes that the rest of the speakers of my variety normally pronounce. Okay? It's down here at the end of this page. When introducing, talking about transcription practice, and I might have this in the right order, I think I don't, we're going to use the IPA dictionary, the International Phonetic Alphabet Dictionary. And one of the problems that we have, one of the first problems that you're going to face is that the symbol that we're going to use here and the symbol that Trajan and Hanna used are not always the same. Not even for Arc English. So that poses an additional challenge because we didn't have enough challenges. I want to give you another one. So one of the first difficulties that you may find is that you're going to be faced with a ton of phonetic symbols and you're going to have to remember some and drop others intentionally out of your memory because in my opinion, you should always give predominance to what you find in Silvia Barreiro's notes. She's going to correct your exam, remember that? And Trejo and Hannah, we're not going to, neither Trejo nor Hannah are going to have to look at your...
What was the compulsory to study this book? Or
sorry?
Your
first part should, your first job should be like 78%. Yes, 78% of your attention should be paid on reading the notes. 20% of your attention in terms of preparing
it is more
theory.
Interesting to focus on the notes.
Yes. I see students pass that never even have a book. And so it's possible to do it. I think it's going to eliminate parts of the nuanced information because in the notes of text it says go to page 223.
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
The book is very confusing, first of all, because of the order of the information, and I think that's the biggest area of confusion. It doesn't seem to have a logical order. The information is collected in a strange way. I think it must make some sense.
Yeah, to for sure,
you should pay most of your attention to the photocopies from Silvia Barreiro before paying attention to the phone sound. And I think it's yours. It's yours. Yes. Don't worry at all. As we've added understanding of the language, linguists have developed an international system to be able to represent all the languages that are known to man. The complete set of symbols are used for what we call transcribing. There are also some diacritics. Diacritics are like secondary symbols besides the phonetic symbols that help us transcribe with subtle distinctions between the sounds. Normally we're going to use, a specific version of the IPA alphabet. I think the one that Sylvia uses is identical to the one that Eva uses in pronunciation. So if you've already gone through pronunciación de lengua inglesa, you're going to feel much more comfortable with the photocopies that if you look at Trajan and Hanna. In fact, in every unit, there's going to be a section that distinguishes. This symbol is different than Trajan and Hanna. So there is like a glossary of the differences. The way that we're going to transcribe in this course is the same way that we transcribe in phonetics, in Eva Esteva's subject. It's called broad transcription. What does this broad transcription mean? I think we have it around here. Right?
I think it's on the notes.
Place it around there. Okay. Yes, the next page.
The first part of the notes.
It's here. Yeah, broad. Okay.
Page five.
Yes, page five. I got it here. We call phonetic transcription the way that we represent the sounds as they should be pronounced. Okay? We're not always going to be very accurate because of what we're saying before. The diacritics are normally going to only be placed in certain cases, and we're going to pay attention to the bigger picture. That's what, in summary, that's what the broad transcription means. broad or phonemic or phonological transcription, every speech sound is identified as a single phoneme and represented with the appropriate symbols. Symbols are represented within slants. Okay, so we would say, for example, 10 for the word 10. It would not show any symbols of articulation or any other type of other phenomena. Like, for example, if the tongue had a plosive quality that we can very clearly differentiate if I pronounce this word in Spanish, 10, or if I pronounce it in English, 10, where there's an aspiration after the T. If I went for a narrow transcription, so we don't have to show diacritics in our transcription, do we? Only if you're indicated to do so. Okay, so there would be specific instructions about which diacritics you have to mention. Aspiration voicelessness in the transcription is something that we did as an exercise in the previous course to understand how transcription worked and to explain this aspiration here. For example, we devoted a lot of time in phonetics course. We're not going to follow this narrow transcription system by a diacritic system. Yes, the aspiration symbol. Exactly, yes. The articulatory qualities of the speech sound. The symbols in diacritics are enclosed in square retinal. Yes, in fact, I miswrote this. This would be in brackets. Yes, phonetic. The first one is phonetic or narrow, and the second one is phonemic or broad. Yes. Okay. If there's any other questions, just let me know. We'll only use a phonemic transcription, in particular the one you learn in the course for pronunciación de lengua inglesa. If you haven't taken that course, if you aren't from UNED, from previous courses, you've graduated from a different university, you're just studying the subject because you like English varieties, and you have doubts, feel free to send me an email, and I'll send you extra information from the previous course so that you have a better preparation. If you lost the notes because you took the course 6 years ago and you don't have the information, don't worry. Send me an email, and I'll get you up to speed. Important thing is for you to feel properly informed. Examples of these elements. You know, the present course, yeah, the phonemic. With respect to the rest of the accents, we will use the phonetic symbols that are most frequently found in education and publication nowadays. So, and this is really interesting. We're going to use the most frequently found phonetic symbols, and that's why I say, I'm going to show it again because some students have joined the conference after we started. I brought the phonemic chart to exemplify RP English, and I would recommend you to try to build a phonemic chart for the other varieties that we study throughout the course. That could be an interesting exercise for you to carry out during the course. For example, a good challenge for the next class would be to think of one for Southern Irish English, for Scottish English, for Welsh English, whichever one you choose, and to try to understand those differences. Am I going to find the same amount of diphthongs? Am I going to find the same amount of vowels? Am I going to find the same amount of consonants? Do I have to take into consideration any other consonants? Regarding intermediate vowels, and this is interesting, in modern RP English, native speakers neutralize the phonemic oppositions E and A and U and O in some unstressed environments. The result the resulting Greek vowels share the phonetic characteristics of both the E and the I on the one hand and the U and the O on the other. More than the phonetic characteristic, I would say, they have the quality of the long vowel and the length of the short vowel, of the weak vowel. So it would be, it takes a bit from both parts. It turns into a strong vowel that it has been weakened. And for example, we see this in word-final position of the E sound, such as in happy, handy, easy. Those word-final E's are going to always be transcribed as only E. No? Maybe I should move to the next page. So all of these Annie, happy, or easy, all of these are going to be transcribed as E, okay? With no colon, and the same is going to happen with the U. It's going to happen with the U, but in other positions, in positions that, I don't think of an example, I'm so bad at examples. An example of a centralized U. So yeah, here.
This is neutralization.
Yes. Here, this oo in evaporation, okay? We have the weakening of the vowel, and it says that it's a phenomena that doesn't occur as commonly as in the other case. In those cases, we're going to use, I think this is out of the sight of the people that are watching from home, more than right on this side. It's going to have a special transcription with no colon. In any case, if you've studied for Ludificante and Lisa, nothing changes. It's exactly the same rules that apply when you study it. We're also, the other example where we see this unstressed vowel is in word internal unstressed position. That's where we're expecting it. Such as an audio or mediates, the unstressed prefixes, such as react or deactivate, the unstressed suffix. So if you see, this is going, it's always going to be a situation of unstressed syllables. Okay, this weakening is going to be present in unstressed syllables. Let me very quickly before we characterize there's not document that I wanted. Yeah, so I'm probably going to skip that. Okay. Okay, then if this part has the appendix. Yeah, this is the same thing that I was mentioning. Check if you have achieved. And this is interesting. This is the part that it says, it gives you the differences in the Trudgel and Hanna book regarding symbols that we're going to use. Symbols and diacritics that are missing in Trudgel and Hanna's book. And it gives the list of vowel symbols and diacritics missing in the preface. If you have a look at, I think in the previous edition, it's on the section. It's the section that's in the Roman numerals in the fourth edition, in the fifth edition, and in the sixth edition, I think it has the same numbering. Yes, in the fourth edition, well, it's much, it's a different part. They're both in Roman numerals, they're different pages. In the previous edition, in the fifth edition, this page is in Roman numerals, 13, 14, and 15, and in the newer edition, which pages 9, 10, and 11 in Roman numerals. And the symbols that are missing are the cardinal, vowel, number 1, closed front, unrounded, also used for the RPE, such as in C. Okay? The last cardinal vowel, centralized, fairly front, fairly closed, unrounded vowel as an RP kit. Okay? The cardinal vowel number 2, closed mid front, unrounded vowel, also used as a conservative pronunciation for red. Cardinal vowel number 3, open mid front, unrounded vowel, also used in for RP in red. Cardinal vowel number 4, open front, unrounded vowel. Cardinal vowel number 5, open back, unrounded vowel, also used for RP, rod. Another way of pronouncing the word red, rod. Cardinal vowel number 6, open mid, back, rounded vowel, also used for RP, O, and sol, sol. Cardinal vowel number 7, closed mid back rounded vowel, the O. The U, cardinal vowel number 8, closed back rounded, also used for RP, U. In Dune, the U, fairly back, fairly closed rounded vowel as in pool. Okay? If you have a look on the sides, the one that you have, the symbol that you have here next to the line is the symbol that you should be using in your transcriptions, okay? A cardinal vowel number, cardinal vowel number 8, fairly back, fairly close, rounded vowel, as in cool, I guess, on the cardinal vowel number 10, closed mid front rounded vowel, the all, cardinal vowel number 13, open back rounded for dull, the cardinal vowel number 14, open mid back unrounded vowel, also used for the RP and cup, the cardinal vowel number 15, cardinal vowel 18, this is like a realization of the A, the U. The schwa is a cardinal vowel number 22, also used in RP for letta. Cardinal vowel number 23, cardinal vowel number 24, cardinal vowel number 25, this one is typical of RP. It's going through all the symbols and it's going to make a reference to which ones are used in RP. As you can see, maybe a good idea, and I think it would probably be an improvement for further years, would be to highlight the ones that have an effect on RP. Like the first one, the second one, the third one, then the fourth one, the sixth one, the seventh. The ones that have a representation in RP, as that's going to be the first accent that we're going to cover. Funnily enough, the cardinal vowel that we have in bird in RP is it doesn't have a colon here after. The colon is indicated as a long vowel in RP. It's the E that we should have a colon. It doesn't have it in my document. It doesn't have it. Maybe in yours it does. and if mine has typo, it's an older document. I'm referring to this one. Should probably have the colon there. Where am I at again? The E, the U, the A, the E, the O. When we put one single dot, like if it was a mid height dot, it would indicate half long vowel. How specific do you have to be? Could be one of your questions. How specific can you be if you're not a native speaker? That's one of the things that you might ask yourself. I would always say, unless you're very sure, play it safe and go with the standard pronunciation that you're expecting to hear or that you've heard before. There are other indications for the vowels that are more closed and more open. I'm going to go on because I'll run out of time if we don't cover the next session. During the course of the next 2 weeks, I'm going to post 2 dates. One is going to be during our classes, and the other one is going to be during the classes that we don't have. So during one of the weeks that we stop, we'll have an extra class in one of those. I have to cover 2 topics. One of the topics are sounds in Southern Irish English, and the other one is prosody in General American English. Those are the areas that I cover as an intercampus tutor. I'll send all of you through the Academos application and email telling you the dates that we're going to do those 2 web conferences. One is going to be during our normal classes, probably the Southern Irish English one, and the extra class is going to be the American English one. Okay? So I would like to call your attention to the document that you might have downloaded called Unit 2 Theory 1. English accents of the British Isles. This document, this is where I say, here we're going to navigate through our comfort zone. Okay, we're still going to be in comfortable territory. What we call RP English is what we detailed an artificial accent that is used as a benchmark against which we compare other accents. So in a certain way, RP is our golden standard. We use RP as our point of comparison. Remember that from the 3 other accents that we're going to cover in this course, there is one major accent that is missing. We are not going to take into consideration Northern Irish English. So that means that if you're interested in learning about Northern Irish English, you have to take into consideration that it's not exam material, okay? So it's not going to be an accent that is going to help you gain a better understanding towards passing the subject. It's not fully implemented, and you should take that into consideration. I want to also remind you that you have to choose another English accent. I was polling the people at the beginning of the class, and I think that the vast majority of the people had a preference for either Scottish or Irish English, and some of you had an interest for Welsh English. It's great to see that variety, but also it represents, I think, the frequency with which you're going to encounter these accents in the real world. There are many more situations where you're going to run into Scottish or Irish people, and you're going to run into Welsh citizens, even though there are very interesting representations, and nowadays we're very lucky, thanks to tools such as YouTube, we can have endless access to hours and hours of any kind of accent. We're going to deal with the kinds of differences that we take into consideration when we deal with accents. And I split the page too fast, because I missed out a key word. The first kind of difference that we're going to take into consideration are the segmental differences. Okay, so we have two barriers of differentiation. One is a segment, and the other one is a super segment. The super segment has to do with connected speech. The segment has to do with pronunciation and isolation. So this would be more of the word and the sentence, and this would have to do with the elements that have to do with prosody, with intonation, and with a speech pattern. We're going to go first over the segmental differences, and in explaining the segmental differences, we can point out four segmental differences between RP English and other accents. The first one is what we call systemic or phonological differences. Okay, so the systemic or phonological differences are the ones where we find different phonemic inventory. What I said before, my phonemic chart is always a variant. We have one phonemic chart for RP and a different phonemic chart for a systemic chart for other varieties. In general, most accents of English have two vowel phonemes in the closed back area, U and U. But in Scottish English, there is only one phoneme. Okay? That's a typical difference between RP English, for example, or almost any other accent of English, and Scottish English. That's a very clear difference. Realization or phonetic. So the second one is realization. Realizational. Phonetic differences. Accents may show differences in the phonetic realization of a given phoneme. For example, the pronunciation of the vowel in the word kit is different in Australian English from its counterpart in RP. It may also include those cases where one variety has major allophones which another does not have, or a different range of allophones. For instance, in Irish English, something that we can talk about in the L, I don't know if you remember, we said that there were two allophonic differences in most one, a dark and a clear realization. And this is very easy to exemplify. This, if you pronounce to yourself, light and milk, the tongue rolls back in milk in most accents, but in Southern Irish English, it has such a sing-songy accent, all of the realizations of L are exterior, like milk. So what that does is that affects automatically the quality of the vowel that proceeds. To be able to realize that like L, you have to change the quality of the E. You can't say milk, you have to say milk. And that is going to have a direct application on the vowel that surrounds those environments. The notes say, for instance, in Irish English, the la is usually clear in all environments, whereas in RP, two different allophones can be distinguished, clear and dark. There are two, let's say, more secondary differences. And this is interesting because these are the typical questions that might be in a quiz, okay? What is the other way of calling a systemic difference? Well, a phonological difference. What is the other way of calling a realizational difference, phonetic difference? Another one would be the phonotactic distribution. The phonotactic distribution, it means the way that accents differ in environments in which some phonemes occur or do not occur.
In other words, a phoneme has a distribution in one accent that is different from the same phoneme's distribution in another accent. And this one is very easy to test on me. For example, because I speak a broad variety of English. I speak something very similar to general American English. My accent is not fully general American because I've lived in Spain too long and I've been too exposed to RP English. So my accent is more neutral than a standard general American accent. But I still conserve all the qualities of the rhoticity and the vowel system of general American English. So in this case, it's very easy. The rhoticity of a language, I mean, sorry, the rhoticity of an accent, and let me remind you what rhoticity is. When we talk about a rhotic accent, it means that the R is pronounced in word final situations and pre-consonant situations, such as in father versus father, or pure, okay? Well, that would also be a word final, pre-consonant. I can't think of a pre-consonant word. So bad an example, I hate myself. Let me see, I have another. Okay, yeah, Howard. Howard is a good example. Oh, is that the view of the students at home? Howard. Okay, it's pre-consonant R. How would I pronounce all of these words in a non-rhotic accent such as RP? Father. Pure. Here I would transform this into a diphthong. Howard. Whereas in a general American accent, this would be father, very nasalized, pure, Howard. Okay? All of them nasalized. Remember that those nasalization diacritics are not necessary in your transcription. You don't have to include them unless they're specifically included. So the rhoticity or the non-rhoticity is the element that is that is mentioned in the phonotactic distribution. Is that the only element that is present? No, there's another one that is also very common. It's called the yaw dropping, and it has a lot to do with social class or with the social norm. What is the yaw? The yaw is this sound, which you may yes, semi-vowel, semi-consonant sound, ya, that sometimes when it's followed, for example, by a vowel, when it's in the presence of a plosive or a nasal consonant, there are two ways of realizing. One is dropping the yaw, or the other one is including the yaw. New or new? New or new?
New is in general, right?
It doesn't have to do so much with, all of the accents have a tendency. There is a general tendency in all of the accents, or in the majority of accents, of dropping the yaw. It has to do more with age groups. Older age groups tend to conserve the yaw. Younger age groups, for the moment, tend to drop the yaw. So it's more social and cultural than it is specific of a language. And in many cases, even in the same speaker, there may be realizations of the yaw and parts where they drop the yaw. It can have to do with realization. I don't know if you ever noticed that the way you speak Spanish is different depending on certain elements that surround you. If you're at work, if you're with friends, if you want to cause a good impression, the dropping of the yaw is more difficult to pinpoint than, for example, the rhoticity. A phenomenon known as neutralization, it occurs in many phonetic environments. I sometimes have this problem when I explain
certain vowels in RP English, and I have to stop thinking in the way I pronounce it, because, for example, here's going to give the example of two words that are homophonous for me, Mary and Mary, but in RP English they're Mari and Mary. Mari and Mary. Very different in RP English. I have exactly the same problem. This is referring to New Zealand English. General American English has almost the same realization of this homophonous neutralization that I do. So when I explain every year, I have the same problem. The and this sound, these two phonemes in phonetics, I struggle very much because I have to remember to pronounce these appropriately, because most of them in my accent are this phoneme. So I tend to pronounce many of these words in an inappropriate way. The lexical differences is the final difference of the segmental differences. Lexical distribution means that a particular set of words is pronounced in one form in one accent and in a different form in another one. In the north of England, for instance, the lexical distribution of the contrast oo and oo is very similar to the RP one. However, in the northern accent, oo is used instead of RP in oo words. So they would say cook and hook instead of cook and hook, which in this particular differentiation of vowels is very significant. It's very clearly noticeable when you listen to it. Just as often, there are vowels in unstressed syllables that vary. And we're going to see this in when we see American English, it's going to be one of the significant variations. The RP word has a schwa, this word over here has a schwa in the third unstressed syllable. It's something like ceremony, and I say ceremony. So I change the stress of the vowel and the quality of the entire vowel. I even added a diphthong where RP English has a schwa. So it's a completely different realization of certain words, and it indicates there that there's an O diphthong in those situations in general American. So when you see words that are ony, airy, you're going to see very different realizations, even stress patterns between general American and RP English. The important point here is that there is no general pattern to observe, but simply that some words behave in a different way. Okay? The variability described are referred to individual sounds. We refer to bigger elements, super segmental features. We can talk about things such as stress or intonation. One of the classes that I'm going to have with you is the prosody in general American English. And I can say that there is an effect in general American English that is copied from New Zealand English, and it's called upspeak, and it follows an entire different pattern. And it changes the intonation and the speech pattern that we use in American English versus the standard pattern that we use of rise and fall that we use in a certain sentence in RP English. This is interesting, and for example, in RP or Welsh accents, we will see the differences in pitch and stress syllables. We're going to see that those features of a sing-songy element is going to be very present in Scottish English or in Southern Irish English. They're very musical because they have ups and downs, whereas RP English has a pause and up and down, like it's soft, relaxing element to the entire accent. What you're going to notice in general is that when we speak proper RP English, what we're doing is basically we're reducing the speed of talking, and we're creating speech patterns that go up and down, whereas when we use other varieties, we're going to incur in shorter vowel length and other elements. These, I don't know if this is the next one.
Sorry, before you continue, what is age dropping?
Yes, sir.
Age dropping, that's my definition.
Sir?
Age dropping.
Age dropping can be another matter of lexical distribution. Simply not pronouncing the H sometimes. In Irish English, yeah, this is a very good one. I'm very glad that you mentioned that. A typical example of this is, I pronounce this in RP English, or almost in English, I would say 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. RP English. If I pronounce this in Southern Irish English, I would say 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. This H dropping is something that is typical of Southern Irish English, for example. Very, very noticeable, very, very bizarre when you hear it for the first time. It's the same thing that we were talking about in the day when we were referring to this global stop here. I can't stop writing a question mark every time I do. When we pronounce this, we will say tu instead of tu. Okay? In here, we say tree.
But it's to be kind of for, at the beginning of a word or not?
At the beginning of a word, it doesn't refer to that it's dropping in this case. In this case. Yes. I don't know if there are other varieties. I can't think of any that drop H's in a significant way. I think that happens. You know where you get that type of absurd H dropping? You get it when a French person tries to speak English and doesn't have enough speaking training. I went to a hotel and you say, why is he dropping the H?
Yeah,
it's because he's so invaded by his accent that he speaks in a flawed manner. But referring to varieties, the H dropping method is referred to as
well.
Yes. I think it is, but I'll check if there are other varieties afterwards. I'll have a look at that.
Thanks.
Yes. Well, description of the English accents in the UK. We already started to talk about this the other day in class. There is not a way of limiting the accents, but there's like an accent continuum. And what we're going to do is we're going to refer to regional variety and to do a general overview of the RP English and the historical social background and the phonetic symbols that we're going to use in our transcription. This is going to be absolutely comfort area for everybody that has studied English phonetics at one end. The spelling of English was fixed in the 18th century, but the spoken language has always been subject to change for various reasons. And this is taken from Crittenden's pronunciation of the English language, where it goes on to talk about three distinctive elements. The three distinctive elements are age, always an important factor, communication purpose, and external or foreign influence. The age creates a specific set of patterns, and some of them can be super segmental, like I said before, like for example, the upspeak in New Zealand or in American English, the yaw dropping that we talked about before, it normally is the differentiation between the younger speakers and older speakers. Because of the social norm, many of those younger speakers will develop a change in their accent as they grow older and acquire something similar to the accent they heard their seniors speak, and they will tend to assimilate that as the standard norm as they grow older. So this is not something that radically changes from one generation to the next. It's something that slowly evolves. From the point of view of communications, depending on the regional development, if a region was poor, the region, if the communication to the region was poor, if there was a ill contact with a certain group, for example, we can see that with emigrant communities that were sent from Scotland to Ireland, we're going to see that there's going to be a variation in the type of English that is spoken. Not specifically referring to RP in this case, but just to give you an example. Another very important element that shapes accents in general, foreign invasions, in the case of RP English and English in general, comes from a set of overlapping accents going one over the other. The Danish Jews, the Angles, the Saxons, the French invasions of the Normans. We've all studied history of the English language, and this is very common. The fixation of the language happens in over the course of the last two centuries. In the 19th century, there tends to be a fixation, but there is a certain preference that is represented from the stabilization of the British Isles as an empire. After the 16th century, there starts to be a favored preference that has to do with social class and social norm. So one of the pronunciations of one of the southeast of England is the one that becomes a predominant accent, and little by little, it turns into the preferred standard, and that is what is going to develop into RP English. I spoke in the last class that when we refer to RP English, it receives many names, the Queen English, Peppa Pig English, BBC English, it's the English that we're used to reading, that we're sorry, to hearing and watching on British channels, on British shows. It's an ideal type of English, and for that reason, it's so artificial that there are more speakers of RP English outside of English than inside English. So that is really an interesting fact. If you move to page 5, it's probably the most important for the purpose of the first transcription that you find on examination. Of the phonetic symbols that we use in our transcriptions of RP English, basically these are going to be the vowels and the diphthongs and also triphthongs. But at the end of the day, triphthongs in RP English are a bit artificial. They're just the diphthongs that end. The triphthongs are going to be, let's see, this is really small print from Mike Oi, these with a schwa at the end. Okay, so basically what we're going to find are the same phonemic chart that we can find if we download the phonemic chart from the British Council, if we go to Prodefinitiv English and we have a look at the pronunciation chart, there's going to be there are going to be two symbols for the E sound. There's going to be an E, a long E, and a shorter I, V, and VIT. There's going to be two symbols, and they're quite separated for the E sound. One is going to be the E in VET, and if you look further down, there's going to be one that we pronounce as bird. It's more, the one that we see after Luke, we see bird. That symbol is like a long schwa. You have to take into consideration, and probably somebody explained this to you in phonetics last year, this symbol is like if we added two schwas in a row. Bird and vet are the two sounds. We have three sounds for the A. We have the ba, the A. We have the that, A, We have the but, We have two sounds for the O. We have the Lord, very similar to the Spanish realization of O, Lord, and we have the lock, We have two realizations for the U sound. We have the U, look, and we have the shorter U, look, look. Okay? This is certainly more challenging because in many of the spellings of both the U and the U, they're a double O, so that makes it different. But it's different to pronounce, for example, look and good. Okay? We have, for the schwa, schwas are normally going to be word beginning or a word final. In our case, we're going to find many of those. For example, appointment, about, and we're going to find a lot of word final in the presence of ER ending, such as in father, letter, mother, carter, okay? Afterwards, I think I covered all the vowels. We have the two vowels that we talked about before in the transcription, the weak E and the weak U. Okay? Weak E normally in word final positions, weak U in medial positions, both like the schwa, unstressed vowels always. They're in unstressed syllables. So that's an interesting transcription tip. Yes. We have eight diphthongs, and yes. Basically, that's why the E and the U lose their force, because they go to unstressed situations. Okay? Example when we say Mary, the E is much easier to find examples. It's always going to be a little unstressed syllable. Annie, Mary, okay? So it'll be this kind of syllable. Whenever we find that word final position, we're always going to go for the weak E. From the point of view of diphthongs, we have eight diphthongs, five triphthongs in Archaic English. Eight diphthongs, five triphthongs. Let me see if I can order this in a fancy way. The diphthongs are basically going to be combinations of words that end in a schwa. I'm going to start with those for a reason, that end in an I or that end in an U. And from these, the triphthongs are the ones that add a schwa to the end of this combination. So going top down in your list, the first one that we find are the ones that ended in E. We have three. I, A, Oi. I, such as in my, A, such as in may, and Oi, such as in toy. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was in the
word final, the ones that end with an U, you have two realizations that have two. And the first one has two ways of being represented. The A can be like the old style type face type A, or a more rounded A style. Ow. And O. And this one, well, I have to make a confession here, not very good at pronouncing this one, because actually, writing out of the area. If I have to confess anything, this diphthong is a one that I find particularly more challenging because I'm American, and I have a tendency of pronouncing the same way a Spanish would pronounce. Oh, but the correct pronunciation would be to add a schwa, L. And that's what makes it sound more British. That factor, that schwa factor that you put inside,
know, I know the answer. Okay, so that schwa that you put in the O, it really changes between sounding Spanish or sounding American and sounding British. So be very careful with not making this mistake. This is very typical of general American. And you might have the tendency, because you've seen it somewhere, of writing this. Remember that the L, the diphthong is going to be the most...
You must use this one in general American.
In general American, exactly, yes. And not this one, because you would sound very uptight if you use this one in American English. Okay. Finally, you have the diphthong that end in the A. Sorry, in the schwa. You have ia, like tia. You have the air, like in tear, and the ua, like in tour. What triphthongs do you have? All of the triphthongs that I mentioned before, ending in I or in u, with a schwa at the end. I'm going to write that on a different page if I have some space again. Some space here. So the five triphthongs that I would have would be Aya, Aya, Oya, Awa, and if you give me a second, I'll give you example words, because as I have already confessed, super bad with examples.
The schwa is schwa at the beginning and at the end.
Schwa at the beginning and at the end. Aya. Such as in the RP, realization of fire. Prayer. Employer. Hour. Slower. Slower.
So the closer you get this O to sound as a schwa, the closer you get to sounding very RP, very English. Okay?
The less successful you are. Impossible. Ah, for sure. It's not impossible.
Okay, so, we're running out of time. So, I'm not going to rush. We're going to, wrap up the RP system. And I think we're going to have enough. I'm going to, give as read all the information in this next page up to, the consonants. Okay? So, I'm going to talk about the art, we can read about it because that's a process that led to the rhoticity of the accent. And I'm going to leave this movie to you because it's basically an elimination of part of the triphthongation, okay? The smoothing of these, the triphthongs, what we normally do is we just lengthen the first, vowel and eliminate the intermediate vowel. That's called a smoothing process. It turns into making it phonetically similar to the vowel that we have in bird, for example. I'm going to take up the lesson next day at this point in consonants. Okay? So any information that you have any questions about, I'm going to go over this consonants, and I will challenge you. Try to come up with phonemic charts of your accent of choice, okay? And challenge all the people that are tuning in from home. You can write and send me a picture, type it up with an IPA alphabet in your word processor, whatever you find more comfortable. Look for one on the internet. Maybe there's already one available that you can adapt.
and you can reuse. But just so you start thinking in your Southern Irish, in your Southern Irish, in Welsh, whatever is the accent of choice, okay? So next day is going to be even more time. We're going to step out of RP English. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye. Sorry.